Welcome back, friends. It's the Buffer Podcast, and it is so good to be with each and every one of you. We appreciate everybody that listens to this podcast. We thank everybody that interacts with us on social media, and we send all of these socially distanced hugs and high fives to those brave men and women who are leaving those nice reviews, because that's the most important thing that you can do for us is get on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.fm and leave a glowing, hopefully, five-star review of The Buffer. My name is Tony Tone.
I'm Joel Krausar. Hey, do you remember those like glowworm toys?
I do.
Were they?
They were weird.
They were weird, but I think everyone had one at some point. At least one. Every friend group had somebody that had one.
What kind of batteries did the glowworms? Because it was essentially like, wasn't it like a Cabbage Patch doll with no legs or arms?
Yeah, it was like a legitimate worm that I think that the light in the room like charged it during the day, and then when the lights turned off, it just glowed. And I'm pretty sure that they are still glowing. It's like there has to be some sort of carcinogenic compound that is running those things. Either that, or they figured Mattel figured out nuclear fission and just didn't tell anybody.
See, I was gonna say like, was it just like 17D batteries in there? But you're probably right. I think maybe it did. I just remember my older girl cousins had those, and they were weird in the 80s.
It's some sort of like actual bioluminescence. They just harvested all of the liquid from the lightning bug population of like Bent, Oregon, and that is what's caused the glowworm. I digress, though. You say glowing review just reminded me of the glowworms.
No, I just had to do a Google search of the original glowworm, and it's creepy. Nostalgic. I'm the most nostalgic person ever, but I don't think I need a glowworm in my life. I don't know if they're going to be making a comeback. All right, so a couple things before we get into the buffer battle this week, because it's late. My kids are awake for some reason, and my wife is working overnight, so we're going to move at a little bit of a quicker pace.
And I've got state baseball in the morning, so I need to get to sleep.
I was
going to
say, Joel and I are busy, y'all. Some things opening this week in the world of streaming content. You've got The Last Letter from Your Lover on Netflix. That's available now. Friday, July 23rd is The Comeback Trail with Bob De Niro and Zach Braff. Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins. Old, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, which looks kind of intriguing. And then next week, July 29th, it's Resort to Love on Netflix. Friday, July 30th, you've got The Exchange, The Green Knight, 9 Days, Stillwater, and perhaps one of the biggest releases of the summer is next week. At least they're hoping that you'll go see Jungle Cruise with The Rock in theaters. Joe,
he's Dwayne. He doesn't go by The Rock anymore. It's DJ. Dwayne Johnson, and then Emily Blunt. You're forgetting the Disney Queen. She is she the most influential youngish actress in Hollywood right now? Emily Blunt?
That's a very good question. She was outstanding in A Quiet Place 2. Jungle Cruise. Well,
that was
intriguing.
Just nepotism, you know, with her husband. I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
She's a great actress. There's no doubt. I have mixed feelings about Jungle Cruise. I love Dwayne Johnson. I'm never going to get to the point where I feel like there's too much Dwayne Johnson. He's great on social media. He's got all his awesome brands. He's introducing the United States Olympic team via this giant, massively pre-produced thing that him and his team. So anyways, Jungle Cruise, it'll probably be big because it's got two huge heavy hitters in it, and it looks like it's well done. So I don't, will it show up on the Buffer Podcast? I don't know.
Isn't it the latest edition of the Disney ride that they're turning into a movie franchise? I mean,
that's what I was going to say. Like, they can just, Disney has so much IP that they can just say, it's like, all right, we did The Little Mermaid. We're doing The Little Mermaid live action. What else do we got?
Well, it's like Pirates of the Caribbean is a ride. Right? There's no story that was the genesis for that. It's like, how can we make this ride into a CGI juggernaut of a film series? So I'm interested. I actually will probably see it. It looks good. I've got kids in the wheelhouse, so let's go. Plus, wasn't the first Steamboat Willie cartoon, movie, right? Wasn't the first Steamboat Willie cartoon called Jungle Cruise 2? So when he's driving the boat?
That's a great question. I don't know that answer. You might be right, though. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll probably see it just because I like everybody involved. But and I just one last thing on Dwayne Johnson. He's done a really fun job of teasing the Black Adam project, and they completed production on that. So that'll be his first entrance into the DC universe as Black Adam, and that'll probably be good. All right, so this week in the Buffa battle, we are putting in two every week. This is definitely two big old summer movies going into the proverbial buffer ring and trying to battle it out to see who will advance to the finals for July, which would be next week. Joel, this week we've got Space Jam, A New Legacy, which is on HBO Max and in theaters, of course, and Black Widow in theaters and on Disney Plus Premium. And I think you're going to start with Black Widow. It's interesting. I feel like I saw a lot of people complaining about the $30 price tag to watch it at home. But, you know, if you think about the price of a ticket at the movie theater and then concessions, I think it might kind of be like a wash, right? If you look at it that way, if you got, you know, two tickets for two people, say $10 to $15 a piece, I mean, you're almost there. So,
well, and I think the people who are complaining about that, just don't buy it. Shut up. Like, I'm kind of over this argument on social media of Disney's billions of dollars and now I have to pay $30 to watch it. No, you can pay less. Go buy yourself a movie theater and support your local economy. Shut up, people. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of people complaining about these streaming services. You don't have to buy it. You don't. You know, if it's important to you, pay for it. If it's not important to you, don't pay for it. It's pretty as simple as that. And I think it's pretty cool and unique. Or not cool and unique. I think it's interesting how the studios have adapted. The delivery systems have adapted. Where we live here in the middle of the country, people are back to going to theaters. Other parts of the country, they're not. So this vehicle needs to be available. Yep. Other parts of the world are shutting back down. You know, we can't be so myopic to think that the American experience is the only experience. These movies make billions of dollars in the global market, and the streaming services are honestly how they're able to deliver to many in the global market. So just deal with it. Don't pay for it if you don't want it. Shut up.
Somebody get my man another soapbox, because he's on it, everybody.
Oh, it just drives me nuts.
He is on it. He's bringing the heat tonight.
It's like the people who are complaining about not being able to go to the Olympics. Guess what? You probably weren't going anyway. It's expensive as hell. Like, I'm sorry. But I'm super excited for the Olympics, by the way. And I think it's neat, interesting how both of these pieces of content have the same delivery system. You can go see it in the theater, or you can subscribe to a streaming service that has it available. Now, the Disney obviously is a little bit more expensive than the HBO Max if you're looking at dollars and cents.
Sure.
But it's a lot of overhead to fund these Marvel movies.
Yeah, man.
And Black Widow is the latest installation, and that's what I'm bringing into the battle. And I'm just going to make it really simple. You don't need to have known every little detail about the Marvel Cinematic Universe if you've forgotten it to enjoy this movie. It kind of operates in its own little space. In my opinion, it's brilliantly acted. Florence Pugh plays Yelena Belova, Scarlett Johansson's Natasha Belova's sister. But we start out the whole origin story where we find out that they were planted Russian spies, which nothing makes me more happy than watching a good old-fashioned Cold War pertaining like spy movie which is what the Red Room is and a lot of the Hydra science. I mean, it's kind of this whole World War II Cold War, you know, good guy versus bad guy. You know, we mentioned the Olympics briefly. What I love when the Americans beat Russia in the Olympics still to this day. Like, it's just, there's just this whole growing up in the 80s and 90s like I did. The Sickle and Hammer were the bad guys. I watched the Berlin Wall fall. I watched, you know, the Russian, the Iron Curtain fall. it's just still kind of, it just really, there's something very comforting, as odd as that is, to watch a movie that kind of harkens back to that James Bond supervillain Cold War, you know, terrorist cell operating in the United States, which is how this movie starts. And then David Harbour, holy crap, is he a good actor. Like, he is so good.
Love that guy.
And he is Alexei Belova in this. You know, he's the Red Guardian, which is the Soviet, you know, Captain America. He's a super soldier, just as Steve Rogers is. And he's hilarious in this movie. You think he's going to be the bad guy. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert. You think he's going to be the bad guy, and it turns out he's not. And then Natasha's mom is played by Rachel Weisz, who we find out is this, you know, chemical mastermind. And what I liked about this movie is the plot was simple. I went with my 10-year-old son, and he was tracking with it 100%. And he had really no exposure to a lot of the previous Marvel Cinematic Universe, as far as just following it along from the scratch. He's seen most of the movies, but he hasn't seen them all. He was tracking. And I also really like that during the opening credits, phenomenal use of Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana. It was a completely different rendition of it that I had never heard before.
Nice. And I'm
totally drawing a blank on the artist who did it. It was like a kind of an eerie acoustic version of it. And
wow.
You're watching the opening credits, and it's just female after female after female, and all of these roles that are typically male dominated throughout Hollywood. And leave it to Kevin Feige and the Marvel Universe to just say, hey, let's give Kate Shortland her first big movie. Let's throw her. Let's let her direct this movie. And she did a phenomenal job directing it. So it's, you know, it's about,
I believe that was Malia J that did the cover of Smells Like, yes, Teen Spirit. Yes, and I know that because I just looked.
Yeah, I had it written down, and I left that notebook actually at my office. So
is it interesting to note, just brief, real quick interjection, so Nirvana getting some love in Black Widow, and then of course showing up in that very early, the first teaser trailer for Matt Reeves's The Batman. So,
oh yeah.
Maybe there's, well, you know.
I think that the marketing people aren't stupid, and they're targeting a lot of these movies to people who are 37 to 50. I mean, that's probably the demographic.
I want to give the credit, and I know that there's people that literally have jobs that, like, pick songs for movies, but I'm always inclined to say, like, your director of Black Widow, your director of you know, like, they're the ones that are, like, James Gunn is the king of, like, the perfect soundtrack,
right?
You know what I mean? But I'm assuming, yes, there's probably more people involved, but yeah, if they're targeting us, it's working. That's, yeah, for sure.
And just to hear those songs remade, well, Social Network did it too with the British Children's Chorus recording of Creep by Radiohead in the trailer. I mean, it's just, they figured, yep, it out, and it works. And the music supervision was really good in this movie. The score was really good. Very, you know, Eastern Bloc, you know, the hard, I don't want to get too nerdy. I could really nerd out on it, but there's a very distinctive Russian sound, Russian composer, Russian style of music. And that was in this movie. But the real star of this movie, and you mentioned the comeback trail with Robert De Niro and Zach Braff. Zach Braff's significant other, Florence Pugh, who plays Yelena, she steals this movie. She absolutely commands every single inch of the screen when she's on. She and Scarlett Johansson have amazing chemistry as the older sister, younger sister fight. We're like, we don't like each other, but we love each other. We bicker, all this. It was great. Great sisterly chemistry, and these two just kick people's ass throughout the entire movie. It's just great. It was so good, so well done. So those are the pros. I mean, well directed, well acted, well cast. The story didn't suck. I thought it was really pretty interesting. You know, trying to stop this Red Room and the bad guy Dracov that they all thought was gone. That they all thought Natasha killed, and killed her daughter. That was her last, you know, sign of, yes, I truly am defecting, right, from this organization. And then we just come to find out that there's just more widows out there, and they have been chemically altered, and there's an antidote that frees them from their training. Just so, there was one really heavy moment that they kind of went through in a very passing glance, where Natasha and her sister Yelena discussed that they were sterilized as part of this Black Widow project, which was very, I think, important, because it showed, even though this is kind of a fun action movie, it showed why we need to be rooting for them to, you know, eliminate this, the monstrosity that is this Black Widow program, because they were kidnapping young girls, training them, and then preventing them from procreating. And it just really was, it was kind of a bizarre thing to throw in there, but I think it was necessary personally. I wanted to highlight that.
Well,
these Marvel movies are tackling some serious issues.
Yeah. And they definitely don't mind the substance. Right. I mean, I think that it could just be as easy as like female led driven superhero movie, big production, special effects, CGI stunts, the whole thing. But then if you start to look at like the story and things that people are going to remember, whether it helps you, you know, be more empathetic to the characters, or I mean, that's a hell of a moment to have that happen. And I bet that was one of the things that, you know, maybe they got tossed around the table, like, is that really necessary? But yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, and the other, and I know this isn't the same thing, that's maybe not a fair comparison, but I think of like The Handmaid's Tale that my wife loves, and how heavy-handed that is. And I know that we're talking Florence about a Marvel movie.
Isn't Florence Pugh in that as well?
I believe that is correct. I haven't seen The Handmaid's Tale, but yes, I believe so. So, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like they know that like the audience is going to be there for a big superhero movie. The like super excited for a female led superhero movie, they're going to be there, but they also know that there's parts of the audience that are like, hey, I can kind of handle some of the heavy handed moments and those real moments. And we've seen a lot of those in different Marvel films, certainly, but yeah, to your point, Joel, that's definitely one of those kind of like, I don't know if it happened to you having to explain it to a 10-year-old, like, what
it
does
didn't
that
come
mean?
Up. He didn't really ask any questions about it. I was prepared to answer it. I think it's one of those moments that if you and I, or maybe even a group of men are sitting around trying to figure out what to cut, what to keep, that might be one of those things. Like, do we really need to go down that road? That might be something that hits the cutting room floor. But I think because of the time and place in history that we're living in, that's something that's very important. And if it is important to you, you know, the women's reproductive rights, if that is something that's important to you, and you're in a position of power, you're probably going to bang the table and say, keep it in there. And whether you agree with the whatever it is or not, that's not the discussion. I thought it was interesting that as an artist and a creator, these people decided to keep that in the movie. I thought that was really interesting. And
I just want to say that in my editing room, it wouldn't just be all guys. I don't know what Joel's deal is, but I'd be very inclusive. I'd have all different people.
Can you not do the Trump impersonation while you're trying to?
We would love all editors, not just old white guys banging tables. So that's all I'm saying. My
don't,
editing room
don't,
is
now. Now you're making it sound like that's what my editing room would be like. I'm just saying, in previous iterations of Hollywood, there wasn't a lot of female representation at the table, and now we're in a time where
Marvel. I know. I was kidding.
I know.
You're correct. Joel is not sexist. He is not.
Correct.
But I think it's great to have female-led movies of any caliber, female-directed movies. And I'll never forget when I interviewed back in the radio days, not that I talked like that, but I got to interview Gina Davis, whom I'm a big fan of. And we talked a lot about representation and how it's important to see yourself on the big screen, the small screen, the devices. And it's a big deal. And it's not gotten that much better for women or people of color. I think
it's Hollywood not been great for overweight upper middle class kids either. I mean, we just Hollywood. had lard ass from Stand By Me. That's it. That's
right. Hollywood can continue to work on their representation, and yeah, and I think that Black Widow, yes, it's a Marvel movie. It's a big old Marvel machine universe. They got all the money there. I mean, but at the same time, they also are very smart in their universe building. Joel, they made a movie about a character that we watched die.
Yeah, right? And I think that they do a good job of coming back, and it actually, the post-credit scene, you know, ends, or the post-credit scene takes place at Black Widow's grave. So, I mean, we know what happens to Natasha. We know that she dies. And Marvel's very comfortable bouncing back and forth in timelines, as we learned from Loki, where it started and where it ends. And it's sure. Interesting how this movie is kind of setting up the next phase of the Disney Plus universe, because the Yelena character, I think, is going to play a big role in the Hawkeye series this fall. So
yes, and what's happening ultimately, right?
Elaine, this movie is passing the torch between Natasha, Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson's character, and Florence Pugh's character of Yelena. Now she's the go-to now that her sister's gone.
Well, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and I don't know who she plays because I'm not, whatever. But anyway, so she's great. And she is essentially working on building like the, I don't want to say anti-Avengers team, but she's going to have the Captain America from Falcon and Winter Soldier. And there might even be like a Red Hulk. It's going to get weird. Like, well, isn't
US Agent technically who
Wyatt Russell character.
Yes. I'm learning the whole comic book world. I didn't read these comics as a kid.
And I didn't either. And quite honestly, there's a lot of content creators on TikTok that do a great job of explaining all like the Marvel Universe stuff in like 60 seconds. And that's about as much as I can tolerate, just because it's this very intricate web. And there's a chance that a Black Widow is not really dead because of the multiverse that just got kicked open at the end of the Loki series. So I don't want to go down any further, but yeah, there's a chance she could be alive. But all right,
I just think this is just a tremendous standalone movie, which I think is important as we kind of cleanse the palate going into, you know, whatever it is, phase four of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
81% on Rotten Tomato from critics, 92% from the audience. But that doesn't matter, ladies and gentlemen, because my entry...
You need that to not matter, looking at the scores on your flick.
This week's buffer champion, soon to be, needs no introduction. He is the world's best known, most recognizable athlete from Ohio... LeBron James, Space Jam, a new Legacy, almost has his jersey number as its critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, 29% from critics, 80% from audiences. All I want to say about Space Jam, A New Legacy is I'm 37 years old. The first Space Jam came out, I think it was 25 or 26 years ago when I was 12 or 13. And this movie, Space Jam, A New Legacy, while it is certainly far from perfect, here's the thing. It's not made for me. And there was a great tweet that echoed that said, hey, I don't know like how to explain this to y'all, but like Space Jam is a kid's movie and it's not meant for you in your 30s. So stop picking it apart. Now, you can absolutely pick this movie apart. You could pick apart the acting, the fact that it could be just like a giant infomercial for Warner Brothers and all their products and properties.
Algae Rhythm
and Don Cheadle. It's very formulaic. I mean, it's like it follows the same path, so to speak, as the first Space Jam. But again, I'm 37. I have three kids. We elected to watch this on HBO Max from the comforts of home, which was great. And my boys, specifically Henry and Ted, who are 9 and 6 respectively, absolutely love Space Jam, A New Legacy. It's making them more interested in basketball, which is cool because I love basketball. Ted, who's 6, is like, I want to play basketball. And I'm like, you can totally play basketball. That's super cool.
You can get him on an AAU team next year.
The movie itself is ridiculous. I mean, that's right.
So you can travel all over the country. The movie's bad.
The premise is, like Joel said, there's the, like, Algae Rhythm is Don Cheadle, and he's inside the server verse, and they pull LeBron James and his son Dom inside, and then they say, you're going to play us in basketball, and then he gets sent down to the Toon place and meets Bugs Bunny, and they turn Big Bugs Bunny into Big Chungus, which was like a hilarious meme thing my kids thought was amazing. And then it's just, you know, next thing you know, you're at a giant basketball game. And I just really had fun spotting all of the DC universe in the crowd, from King Kong to Iron Giant to 89 Tim Burton Batman. Pennywise from It was in the crowd. Game of Thrones cast members, like, that for me was more fun than anything else, kind of just looking to see how many, like, the mask was there. And again, these are certainly people playing these roles, not actually Jim Carrey. But yeah, it's not gonna win any awards, Space Jam: A New Legacy. It's the best, you know, it's the best definition of, like, I always say, those popcorn summer movies that are, you go in ready to kind of check out. I think there's enough laughs for parents. And I think, Joel, there'll probably be a third one, because it's, guess what? To no surprise, it's making some money.
Well, the other thing too, okay, so I think the problem with this, with our generation, is there's constantly the debate, who's better, LeBron James or Michael Jordan? And I think you and I both agree that from a basketball standpoint, Michael Jordan was the better champion. LeBron James might be a better actual basketball player as far as just physical tools go. He's bigger, he's faster, he's stronger. But Jordan was a better champion. You know, didn't have to bounce around teams to win. You know, won with guys like Tony Kukoc and BJ Armstrong instead of Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. I mean, those guys are Hall of Famers. And I think that that's where our generation gets bogged down. LeBron James is a better actor than Michael Jordan, and more likable on camera than Michael Jordan. LeBron James did not have his own McDonald's sandwich in promotions of Space Jam: A New Legacy like Michael Jordan had. He had the McJordan Deluxe that was a barbecue cheese bacon cheeseburger, if I remember correctly.
And I remember that.
That was the marketing machine, one of the marketing machines for Space Jam.
Yep.
Plus, I'm a huge Looney Tunes fan. So even though I did fall asleep watching this movie last night, it actually had more to do with how it just flat out exhausted I have been from being go, 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 nonstop baseball the last 10 days.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to keep your, I mean, I feel like you would need to watch it with your kids to justify giving it your attention. Like, I've watched it, so I've seen it in its entirety, but admittedly, it's been on in my house probably four times where I've just been looking at my phone, because I'm an awesome parent, and I'll look up and I'll go, okay, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's background noise.
Right.
And I don't even really think in the buffer battle world that we're in that it has enough to pack a punch. But I just wanted to make the case that this movie is getting panned up and down the block. And I just want to say that I understand why, but I've seen worse.
I've seen worse about this worse year.
On this show. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just one of those things, like, you know, did we need three Shreks?
Hey,
I don't know.
Hey.
Did we need a third Austin Powers movie?
Yes, those are on Netflix right now, and I've watched all three of them in the last 10 days. Did you see the meme? I got to send you this meme. Go ahead, though.
I just feel like, I think a Space Jam sequel sooner would have made more sense, but I also am kind of glad that it didn't happen. And by the way, the Michael Jordan Space Jam is not perfect either.
Oh, I mean, it's bad. Kind of, I've only saw it once. I saw it in the theater, you know, and said, I never need to see this again.
like Jordan like went to playing baseball, which was kind of interesting at the end of the original Space Jam. But I don't know. I just think people are fit to be tied. And as someone that grew up in the Chicago suburbs and was a giant Chicago Bulls fan and would prefer Michael Jordan over LeBron James, I can still enjoy a movie that borrows a lot from an original that had Michael Jordan in it that has LeBron James in it. So I just hope that if you have kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews, or if you just have HBO Max, give it a chance. If you saw the original Space Jam, if you like Looney Tunes, I thought it was interesting, Joel, that like Speedy Gonzalez is voiced by Gabriel Iglesias, Fluffy.
Oh yeah.
Who's a very funny comedian. So I thought that was kind of cool how they brought in some, you know, some notable folks to do some of those voices. But yeah, I rest my case, Your Honor. Space Jam, A New Legacy, 29% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So the Looney Tunes are like my dad's favorite thing in the world. He has original cells from like the Michigan J. Frog episode. The there was only one. And then he's got in our basement, he has it's a print that it's all of the Looney Tunes characters, and it's just speechless at the time at the top, and they're all looking sad, and it has all of Mel Blanc's dates, so like his date he was born and the date that he died. Like Mel Blanc was such a huge person in my household growing up. A lot of the comedy was, you know, Looney Tunes based, so it's always good for me to see these characters again, even if they're voiced, you know, obviously by different people. It's just so amazing how one man, or two men, Chuck Jones and Mel Blanc, kind of created this whole universe, the Tooniverse, if you will. And seeing that Warner Brothers water tower at the beginning, you know, I'm just waiting for the Animaniacs to hop out. Like, it's just that there was some real nostalgia with this movie, too, that I think gives it some bonus points. It's not as bad as everybody is saying it is. It's not a good movie, but at the same time, you can't expect it to be Citizen Kane. You know, just watch this movie to be have fun with your kids. Like, it's
exactly
it's better than Boss Baby 2.
Yeah, I would say that it is. I would agree with you there. All right, but it sounds like for the case of for the sake of this show, that Black Widow is better, and we'll move on. Even though I made the case for Space Jam. Black Widow will live to fight another day, even though Black Widow herself did not. She's dead, but she will live on in the Buffer podcast. So way to go, Scarlett Johansson and Colin Jost. Like, I just love David Harbour. So I'm okay with Black Widow winning just because of how much I like David Harbour as a actor.
Colin Jost, I'm a fan. Good for him. He's great on Weekend Update and as the head writer, co-head writer of Saturday Night Live. Marries Scarlett Johansson, but most importantly, he is the pen behind one of the greatest guilty pleasure movies that I'm not gonna. It's not my guilty pleasure this week, but he is the scriptwriter of Staten Island Summer. And that is one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies of all time.
It's a good choice. It's definitely worth watching. It's probably better than Space Jam, A New Legacy. All right, this week's winner is Black Widow, which is still in theaters and on Disney Plus Premium. And you're going to be a winner because we're going to give you a little break to maybe refill your favorite beverage. Hang tight. Welcome back to the Buffer Podcast. We are going to move quick through our features this week because I've got to get kids to sleep and Joel's got to get ready for state baseball. But we're going to jump right into the guilty pleasures for this week, Joel. And I'm going to go first, and I'm going to be brief because I'm not I want this guilty pleasure to get better. I referenced this last week. And I know that it's got potential. So American Horror Stories is exploring, if you will, the universe of American Horror Story. It's on FX or Hulu. The first two episodes were just kind of revisiting the murder house, which is where season one of American Horror Story took place. I feel like it's been rehashed too many times. I wasn't a big fan, but they've kind of hooked me with the latest two episodes, or the next episodes, which I haven't started yet, admittedly, but I will. But that is my guilty pleasure. And American Horror Story will have another season, which I don't know if it's season 8, 9, or 10. I don't know how many. But Joel, that's one of the shows that my wife and I have watched, I want to say, every season together. So, and some are better than others. Some have been great. Some have been That's terrible. Cool. Some I've checked out on. But it's kind of one of those things that we've done together and that we look forward to, because they kind of, they typically start in a non-pandemic towards like the end of August. And then they definitely ramp up during October, which of course has Halloween. But that's what I've got for a guilty pleasure this week. American Horror Stories on FX and Hulu.
Yeah, I won't watch any of that stuff. So good for you guys. I'm glad you and Casey have something that you can watch together. That's what the Big Brother is for me and my wife, that we talked about last week. So those are good to have. That's what the guilty pleasures are
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely.
My guilty pleasure is actually kind of segues nicely from the whole Space Jam discussion and LeBron James. LeBron James is an underrated actor. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to stick with it. And I actually was thinking I'd like to see like a reboot of the Barbershop movies that has LeBron James in them.
Interesting.
Yeah, and not just because of his show The Shop that he had on HBO, where it was just a bunch of guys sitting around the barbershop talking about important issues, which was very good, by the way. I have a lot of respect for LeBron James, and not just as a businessman, but actually as an entertainer, and that came from my guilty pleasure, which is a Judd Apatow movie that's the real feature of Amy Schumer as a comedian. The really off color romantic comedy that is Trainwreck. Amy Schumer, the movie opens up with, you know, a guy that was one of my comedic icons when I thought I wanted to be a stand-up comic and a stand-up comedy writer. My dog whistle, we talked about Colin Jost on Weekend Update. My second favorite Weekend Update host behind Norm MacDonald is Colin Quinn. And we got to interview Colin on the radio. And he plays Amy Schumer's dad brilliantly. His two daughters are Amy Schumer and Brie Larson. Brie Larson, obviously Captain Marvel, so that kind of even ties into the Marvel universe. Brie Larson married to one of my other favorite stand-ups, Mike Birbiglia, in this movie. Birbiglia has a great bit on his podcast too about how he gets harassed on Twitter as to Brie Larson would never be married to someone who looks like Mike Birbiglia. Like, he's like, the fact that people have to go out of their way to be this critical of me, it's a little unsettling. But this movie's so good. There's tremendous chemistry between Amy Schumer and Bill Hader. But LeBron James steals every scene he's in as himself, because Bill Hader's a sports medicine orthopedic surgeon and LeBron's one of his patients and friends. And it's like, he's given, you know, relationship advice. It's just, it's so good. And he's like this like teenager. It's just you go back and rewatch it and it's a home run of a rom-com, and it's a guilty pleasure for me. I'll watch Trainwreck anytime it's on. If it's on cable, I'll stop and watch it. It's almost made the cut to be purchased. I did purchase my guilty pleasure that I'm going to talk about next week, though.
Nice. Well, that's good. Trainwreck is great. I enjoyed seeing it in theaters. And I'm all about the Judd movies and the fact that he doesn't seem to mind giving, you know, some of these movies, Joel, they have longer run times, and I'm here for it. I'm here for a longer movie.
And I think this is a long one that worked. I don't think there was a lot of dead space in that one.
And like, getting older and middle-aged, whatever, I appreciate this is 40 more, and there's a lot of like moments that he lets breathe in that. And maybe at my first pass, I didn't appreciate it as much. So I'm all about it.
I'm almost 40. I'm under 6 months away from turning 40.
Wow.
I watched This Is 40 a couple of weeks ago. It was uncomfortable. how dialed in that movie is to my age. It uncomfortable is the way. And like his oldest child in that movie, their oldest child is about a year younger than what my, it hit home way too hard.
Wow.
It was uncomfortable, I think is the right word to use.
I think that's perfect. All right. It's time to make our confessions, everybody, as we enter the Buffer Confessional.
Confessions.
Sometimes I have to mute my microphone to toot. Anyways.
Is that what we're confessing now? Our microphone habits?
I didn't say anything.
What about my text to you today about bathroom etiquette? Why are we in 2021 and people are still talking to each other while they're at urinals? Stop it. Stop it.
I can't do it. Yeah. There's nothing that needs to be said at a urinal that couldn't have been said prior to or after the fact, or just text me. Like I don't want it to happen. All right. I think are you going first with the confessions?
Yeah, or am I'm going to go first.
I've got a surprise. I feel like I have another surprise, but yeah, go ahead.
So I was having a hard time figuring out.
I'll tell you where I'm at.
Figuring out a theme for this week's confession. So I just pulled up the old AFI Top 100. You know, the greatest movies of all time. And we mentioned how we interviewed Colin Quinn on the radio. I also had the opportunity to interview Alan Alda, which we all know from the TV show MASH. Looking at the AFI Top 100, I did realize I've never actually seen the movie version of MASH, which I know is so highly acclaimed and highly regarded.
Oh, wow.
I've not seen the movie of MASH, and it's probably one I need to check out.
I'm with you there. I think I've seen pieces of it.
I know Donald Sutherland is in it, but that's it.
Yeah. The same Donald Sutherland that was the reason that Animal House was made, which I will forever love that anecdote that the casting of Donald Sutherland gave permission for R-rated comedies to be born. Like, that's the best. I love
it. Yeah, it's like the studio wasn't going to green light it, but when they're saying Donald Sutherland was in, they're like, oh, okay, is that what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. They were like, okay, you have credibility now because the rest of you schmucks, we don't really know. But yeah, go ahead, go make your movie if Donald Sutherland's in it. That's just like that's like the ultimate Hollywood power, is when you can just get something made, hopefully it's good, and you just have that ability, that green light ability is just outstanding. So I was talking to my dad this week, which happens a lot on FaceTime. And we were talking about movies, and my dad, so I don't know how we got to James Bond, but I was telling him, I'm like, you know, there's another James Bond coming out. It's probably the last one for Daniel Craig. It looks really good. I can't think of the name of it, but it's gotten pushed a lot. Like the James Bond movie, that release, it has changed almost as much as Ghostbusters Afterlife. And what are you going to do when you're in a global pandemic and you've got a movie that costs a lot of money? They don't want to stream it. They want you to see it in theaters. Long story short, I realized in looking into the James Bond lore that I have not seen Tomorrow Never Dies, everybody. And I don't know how bad I feel about that.
They're all good.
I love GoldenEye, the movie, and I love GoldenEye, the Nintendo 64 game, more. But I just, for whatever reason, I can't sit here and tell you that I have seen from 1997 Tomorrow Never Dies. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. The Bond movies were such an important part of my childhood. We watched when it was on like 24 Hours of Bond on TBS. It was every, you know, Roger Moore. So, and Sean Connery, obviously, all those Bonds. And then you're right. The GoldenEye kind of respawned the interest for our generation because of the game. So you should see it.
It was such a big game.
We're all about connective tissue, because, you know, Daniel Craig is the new Bond, or is the current Bond, and his wife is Rachel Weisz, who's in Black Widow. We're everywhere. with connective tissue tonight on the Buffer podcast.
That's so fantastic. And I'm going to get the golden gun from GoldenEye to shoot my dogs that won't stop making noise.
Is that the segue into your dress socks and Crocs?
Good night. My dress socks and Crocs give me all the slappy pappy as I mute myself for fighting dogs. Crocs.
Slappy pappy. Dress socks and Crocs.
Slap my pappy and call me
Okay, that's South Park the movie. Bigger, longer, uncut.
Oh, can somebody shoot these dogs?
For the love of Pete. Hey! Cut it out.
Anyways.
No animals have been harmed in the recording of this podcast. Old, I don't know.
Not yet.
You've had a rough week with the canines.
Doc the Corgi is, 10 months old. Yeah, we have two dogs. We have Doc the Corgi, who's named after Dr. Emmett L. Brown from Back to the Future. Doc is less than a year old. And Archie, who is a puggle, who is, three. He's fine. So yesterday, my wife went to take one of my kids to summer camp and left Doc the Corgi out of his kennel. She was gone for approximately 15 minutes. Upon returning home, Doc the Corgi had chewed a hole in our kitchen floor. Now, our kitchen floor is linoleum, which is not the best. We moved in May. We had thought we will eventually redo this kitchen floor, but Doc the Corgi thought you should scramble and get it redone tomorrow, which is Friday, July 23rd. So shout out to my friend James, who does flooring that had a cancellation and that is able to do a floor. But yeah, so the old adage of my dog ate my homework, we know not to be true, but my corgi ate my kitchen floor is factual because I have pictures.
And that's not just like a small hole. It was like 3 feet. It was legit.
Yeah. The suggestions of just move your throw rug are very appreciated, but it was kind of was close to a doorway and it's fine. I was my plans for Friday were to just throw $1,500 out the window. So at least now the $1,500 will turn into a kitchen floor. That's good.
Which actually adds resale value to your home and value to your home. So it's, in a way, you're getting at least some return on investment.
Yes. And I'm sitting here at my dining room table recording the Buffer podcast, and there are just boxes of vinyl plank waterproof
luxury vinyl tile, I believe is what it's called.
It's the Great Lakes Vinyl Floors Heritage Series. Pet and family friendly. Hopefully it's corgi proof.
Just keep the seams installed right and you'll be okay. We're so lame. We're at that point in our life where I'm excited about a home refinance and lowering my interest rate.
Nice.
While you are replacing flooring. And I bought a new dehumidifier for my basement this week. And like, that's our life. Like, we used to be like, hey, what concert are we going to go see? Now it's, hey, what home improvement job can we do? I'm geeked over the smart thermostat I put in a couple weeks ago. Like, and it's already saving me money. Like, it's like, why is that what gets me excited anymore is smart homes? But my dress socks and Crocs, my dress socks and Crocs is just all baseball all the time. And we've been playing since January or practicing since January. So 7 months of work and it all comes down to our state tournament. We had a banquet tonight and I just love these kids. Like, it's one of those things where we're not a good team, but we're a hardworking team. And, when you're a youngster and you think back, like, I was fortunate to play on some really good championship caliber teams as a player growing up. My dad coached those teams. My dad had a cup of coffee in minor league baseball and you know, I think is still one of his high school's like all time leading like on base percentage as a leadoff hitter. Like I grew up with a baseball dad who knew how to teach the game and knew how to play the game, and kind of being able to be that next generation of coach has just been really enjoyable this summer. So I'm gonna miss it. I mean, it's one of those things where you're glad it's over, but you kind of wish it could keep going. So it's just kind of crazy how that you hear coaches say that when you're a player, and then now as you're older and you're on the other side, it's just kind of cool to see it come to fruition on that side of it. And it reminds you that there's a lot of great kids out there. I think, unfortunately, adults like to bag on kids. And I've got 11 kids that I would, you know, ask them to do anything because they're hardworking kids and they're willing to learn. And it just goes to show, if you take the mentality of, I just want to learn, good things will happen for you. So hopefully we can pull off some wins. And we're certainly not favored to win this tournament, but we're not the lowest seed, and so let's see if we can pull a shock the world type tournament. We've been saying that we're going to be like Daniel LaRusso and Karate Kid 1 and the All Valley Karate Kid Karate Team yes. tournament. No one expected him to win, and if we do, I'm going to do the biggest crane kick off the mound if we can pull this tournament off and win it. So. Hopefully we can do it.
I hope that happens for your sake. And I hope that you don't have to face Billy Zabka. That's exciting. And it's crazy to think that it's that time of year where youth baseball is wrapping up. It's wild. It's just, I don't know if I'm mentally prepared for.
We're exactly 1 month away from school starting too today. My wife, who's going back into the teaching profession, notified me of that this morning.
It's wild. Absolutely wild. Oh, doesn't slow down, that's for sure.
Nope.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into the Buffer Poddle, the Buffer Podcast this week. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcasts is where you can find the Buffer: Apple, Spotify, Anchor.fm. Rate, review, subscribe, like on Facebook, follow on Twitter. And next week we will have our Buffer July finale battle and Black Widow advancing to that, defeating Space Jam: A New Legacy this week. Joel, it'll be interesting to see who reigns supreme. I think we've got Fear Street 1994 in the mix. We've certainly got Black Widow, and I'm drawing a blank on the third piece of content, but we'll have it all next week.
Yeah, and maybe we'll have a guest to help determine the winner.
Absolutely. It's going to be great. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll see you right back here next week on The Buffer.